Hey, this is James from StarWarsPunk.com. Good morning, punks. This is a solo episode. Couch potato, what's his face, as Jeff Radke likes to call him, will not be here again this week. So we didn't get around to recording an episode on Saturday, our normal recording time. So I'm doing one now on Wednesday morning. So I'm going to record this and then throw it right up. So the show notes for this episode might be a little sparse or might be non-existent. I don't know. And maybe I'll go back to them, but maybe not. I hate show notes. That's actually my least favorite part of the podcast. I hate the show notes. So, but what are we talking about today? We are talking about, originally it was going to be Bug Out Bag seasonality and the different seasons and what you do for the different seasons. But I think that's going to be a really, really long episode and would be better suited to be more than one episode. It would be better suited being at least two episodes. Because I don't feel that you need to, unless you live in somewhere really weird, you don't need a four-season bag. You really need a two-season bag. And especially, well, if you live in some really temperate areas like the equator, or possibly even southern Florida, you really only need one bag. If you live in those areas where you don't have seasons, then this podcast is mostly obsolete for you. So, enjoy listening anyway, but it's probably not for you. For the rest of us that have four seasons, and if you're in Tennessee, we literally have four seasons in a week sometimes. As a side note, before we jump into the podcast, we started out this week, it was a low of 11 degrees, or was it 8? So it was really, really single digits, and then we had a couple inches of snow, which is kind of different. Well, we don't usually get a lot of snow. And it was kind of random, and it snowed, and it actually stuck, which is kind of weird. And yesterday, it was up in the 60s or higher, maybe higher. Today, already it's 56 degrees, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning. So, and raining, and windy. Yesterday was super windy. It just... Real quick, looking at the high of today, it's going to be 63. We're friends. We talk about weather. That's what we do. And let's see. For the rest of the week, the highest of the week will be 65 on Thursday, and the lowest of the week will be 44. So it won't even be freezing this week. Maybe I can put my rain barrel outside now. Whatever. So, yeah. Stupid weather. Four seasons in a week? What the hell is that shit? But yeah. We will not be talking about every eventuality. We're going to focus on preparing your bug out bag for winter instead of every. I was going to do basically the times that I feel that you should and I do change up my bug out bag is for winter and then summer. There's layover with spring and fall that doesn't really, if you change it out in fall, you're good fall, winter, and then you change it back spring, summer. That's generally what I do. Spring cleaning, spring bug out bag changing. But I mean, obviously here in Tennessee with a low of 44, like, I know my Wisconsin and Canadian friends are like, that's summer, dude. That's summer. Use guys. First up. So I've kind of aligned this. We're going to talk about winter bags first, and this will be sort of a quick part of it. That your winter bag will usually need to carry more things. You don't, I mean, it's really easy to go ultralight in the summer or in a moderate temperature as opposed to going ultralight in, you know, cold or really, really cold, you know. Going ultralight here in Tennessee, it's not really that hard usually. You know, I said that we had an 11 degree temperature, but that was like one day. By the next day, we were up to like 30s, and then obviously now back up to the 60s. So, not really a big deal. But if you do live further north, where you have to deal with like negative 23, you need a lot more protection in that bag, and that so you could, if you live in those areas, you could have two dedicated bags, or at least. Or at least two bags. So obviously I do feel that your winter bag may need to be bigger, and having that bigger bag set aside for winter would be prudent. Having it would be nice to have duplicates of all of your gear, but on some things that's just too expensive and it's just not really necessary. It would be nice, but we're all not made of money, so it's not going to happen, you know. I can't go out and buy a spare buck hoodlum at like $180 to throw in my spare bug out bag. And I'm sure you guys are sort of the same way. I've had different bags before that have like top of the line gear and secondary gear, where it's like, you know, your buddy needs a bag, so you're like, here, take the number two bag, you know, that has like, as you upgrade stuff, you then have spares, and, you know, you upgrade your bag, you have a backup bag, you upgrade your knife, you have a backup knife, you throw all that stuff into your backup bag, and, you know, you have it in there. That will work for, you know, a winter bag. You can have it all year round with your dedicated winter gear that doesn't get used in the summer, you know, your heavier bags, your heavier tents. And it can stay in there, and then your items that will work in both climates, both temperatures, you know, say your knife and your fire starting system, you know, you can have that, you move it back and forth. And eventually, you know, you could have duplicates, but yeah, you don't need to move everything back and forth, but having that bigger bag, especially in an area where you really have colder temperatures, you know, Wisconsin, upper peninsula, Michigan, Canada. I've been to Michigan, and the summer was pretty decent. You know, it was warm. You know, you can go swimming and stuff. So probably don't want all that bulk and all the extra stuff in the summertime, but you're going to need it in the wintertime. So I would say if you live in those areas, consider having a second bigger bag. Or a couple other options for that are you can strap extra pouches and stuff to the outside. Like me, I will carry always my sleeping pad, whether it be the Ridge Rest or one of the self-inflating ones on the outside. And sometimes I will carry my sleeping bag, my sleep system on the outside as well, because it tends to be one of the bulkier items, and having it in the pack just takes up a lot of room, and I don't like it. So I'll roll up my sleeping pad inside of the sleeping bag, and then just strap that to the outside. You can get pouches for pretty much everything. You get Molly or Alice packs to clip on the outside of your pack to expand it. I'm not used to. I still do have a large Alice pack as it's a backup bag. It's my backup bag. And it holds a lot of room. And I saw a company that was making basically modular pouches for the outside. You can like have two long pouches on either side, and, you know, a couple extra pouches on the front. And there are a lot of really cool Alice modifications. The only one I did was put the Fast Tech buckles on mine so I can open it up without the stretching. It was weird the way it was. But, yeah, it's... Look up the Hellcat pack. That thing is pretty cool. It's a super modded out Alice pack. And, so yeah, there's that option. They have them for, you can get them for, like I said, you can strap stuff on your Molly pack. Go look at the Kifaru packs and all the modular accessories you can strap on those things. Yeah. If you want to like dream and lust over, an inch bag, in case you're never coming back bag, which is literally a bug out bag on steroids. It's a, you're leaving home because the apocalypse has happened. The shit has hit the fan. You will never return to your home. And you need to take pretty much everything you possibly can to restart civilization. And some people have built inch bags. And whew, man, are they heavy. But, it's sort of prepper porn. Like, you know, you get stuck scrolling through the forums. You're like, oh, that's awesome. And you get little ideas. You know, like, maybe you're not going to carry everything. But, man, that one item, that's good. I need that. So, yeah. Or, and it won't really work here, and I'm trying to figure out, like, a sort of an all-terrain version. But if you are up north and you do have frequent snowfall, you can consider getting a poke, which is basically a sled, you know, with a lid on it. You can clamp down, or sometimes not. It's like webbing or strap over it. And you pull it behind you, and you can load it up. You know, like it's a pack mule sled that you pull behind you. And man, we have snow for like, you know, 4 days a year, not really applicable here. And usually it's not good snow, so it's not even good snow to go, you know, poking in. But yeah, having a poke might be an option for you. You know, and you can keep it loaded up, ready to go, you know, probably not by your door like the bug out bag. You might be able to keep it in your car or truck if you have extra room to load it up and then, you know, maybe padlock it down. And some of them are big enough to possibly accommodate the bug out bag or a lot of extra items, especially non-freezable ones. Not, you know, you don't want to put cans of beans and cases of water in there and leave it outside because it'll be destroyed. But, you know, you can do that, and then you could you could strap on your bug out bag onto it and then pull it all along, you know, maybe even carry a lighter pack like ribs front pack. I got one of those. So, you know, you have your like most needed items accessible while you're hiking, and then the rest of it you're just pulling along and it's not even that hard of a time. So you might want to consider that in the wintertime. Maybe have your normal summer bug out bag and then have a poke loaded down with your extra winter items, you know, especially like a four season tent or something that's going to weigh a bit more, and then remove your summertime out of your bag. Or yeah, definitely remove it. There's no need to double carry items that you're not going to use. So yeah. And yeah, like I really want to come up with like a poke with like all-terrain wheels on it, like really big, like bicycle wheels. It'll bump over logs and like over uneven stuff and can't be flipped over, you know, like those remote controlled trucks that have the wheels bigger than it, so that when it flips over it's still it doesn't matter because it's the same way either way. Make something like that so I can like pull super heavy like hulks here in Tennessee, you know, like all season round where we don't have snow, but that would be cool, you know, make it waterproof. I'm kind of thinking like if I could mount an axis through like two sleds and then put a gasket on them so they don't leak and then seal them together with like latches or something and then have the big wheels that are bigger than it, and then it should roll everywhere. But that's just BSing and thinking aloud. And you know, if you guys have seen something like that, shoot me an email, jamesferrellpunk.com, so I can check it out. Next, because I'm getting long-winded. I don't want to make this already a two-parter episode, like a three-parter. That would be terrible. So, yeah, my mouse is dead. Shelter. Shelter is next. So yeah, I like hammocks. I like hammocks a lot. They're not necessarily a four-season sleep system. They can be. It can be. I have slept down in the 20s, which, you know, is cold for here. I was very comfortable. Was not even cold in the least bit. You know, but it takes some effort, you know. You got to try. A little bit, you know. So, a hammock can be a sleep system. We will talk about that, you know, a four-season sleep system. Some people would rather go with... So, basically, you either have hammocks or tents. Different kinds of hammocks, different kinds of tents. It's basically your two options. I guess there are people that... Yeah, I guess you could go out there without no shelter. You know, you can build different sorts of debris huts and shelters, and I've done that, and it's a good skill to have. You should prepare with a pack, though. You should have a system. You should have a shelter system in place to be prepared for it. You know, the debris huts and whatever should be done in controlled times where you can... You know, basically abort if something goes wrong and learn from your, you know, learn the lessons. But I wouldn't make that my survival plan. You want to plan to give yourself the best odds. And that part of that is bringing your own shelter that works and will help you to survive. So, yeah, first let's talk about four-season tents. I'm not a tent guy. I have a single tent. It is a Eureka one person, Solitude or whatever, whatever it is. I don't know. I haven't used it in years because I have hammocks now. But yeah, so your normal, especially in the colder climates where you have a lot of snowfall, your normal three season tents won't work. They're not going to be as strong, you know, structurally. They're not going to be able to support the snow wave if you get a lot of snowfall. They're going to be stronger, obviously. They're going to be heavier. They're going to have closable vents and windows so that you can sort of tweak and adjust how much airflow you want and, you know, how much you don't want in there to control the temperature. They're going to be a lot more expensive. They're going to be heavier. You know, even you can find light four-season tents, but, you know, like with everything... When you start getting towards that, you know, ultralight, you know, high speed gear, you're going to pay for it. So you got to weigh that. You know, if you live in an area like me, I really don't think a four season tent would ever be necessary here in Tennessee. I just don't, you know, we don't get that many cold days and we don't get that much snowfall in the year. If anything, I need, you know, it's been raining for weeks and weeks here, so that's a bigger concern, is staying dry. So, can you use a hammock as a four-season system? Yes. There are many ways. You can use closed cell foam or self-inflating mats like you would in a tent or on the ground. Not necessarily the best. A lot of the comfort you get from the hammock is lost by having to sit on the mat. You can't really roll around as much because basically anything that touches like the bottom side of the hammock is going to freeze, you know, through conduction. Yeah, I believe conduction. Your heat will get stolen away. You know, the air blows beneath you and it'll just steal your heat away. In the hammock, you know, like I use a hammock for my couch here in the living room of my tiny house. And when it gets a bit colder, you know, like I don't like it super hot in here. Like right now it's a balmy 63 in here. And that's pretty much without running heat. Like, I basically turned it on a few degrees this morning. It was at 59, which is really comfortable. Serenity would be dying. She would be dying, you know, and 63 for me, You know, I don't sit around the house naked. I am doing this podcast right now wearing clothes. Sweatpants, socks, you know, long sleeve thermal shirt. So usually wear my hoodie. But yeah, 63 is perfectly fine. But when it gets down to about 55, you know, your butt will start freezing in the hammock. And if you're using a mat and you're sleeping, if your elbows touch off, you know, like if you don't, a lot of the mats aren't that much wider than you. So when your elbow starts to slip off, like that elbow will start getting really cold. That's pretty bad. And, you know, if you move that, if you, there's tricks you can get with like, the shelf liners you get from like the housewares departments at stores that keep like things from sliding around, like the no slide thingies. They're probably a good thing to sort of like double-sided sticky tape down to the back of your mat. Like I know a ridge rest in a hammock will slide and slide, and then it'll slide out from, I've had it like slide all the way down my feet and left, you know, my upper back and sometimes my butt exposed, freezing. That's not good. Or it'll like shimmy out from the side of me, and then, you know, the side of me that's on the hammock there will be start freezing. So those no slip like liner things, they can work. Kind of a hassle though, like I said. A better option would be to make or buy an underquilt and use that with either a sleeping bag or an overquilt. You know, so you have the underquilt, overquilt thing. Because if you don't put down a pad and you sit on your hammock, all of the stuff underneath you will compress, all the padding in your sleeping bag will compress and be useless. You know, it'll be your bottom side, anything touching the hammock there will start to freeze. Not good. So don't do that. So yeah, an underquilt, you can make them. I've made one before for sleeping out of I had a ridgeline, and then I used my military whoopee and just put it up top of it and then pulled it beneath me, and that worked fine, at least for inside. Not super good for outside, especially really, really plunging temperatures. You want a little bit more warmth, goose down, you know, or just a better material, more padding, to have more warmth. You want to trap the air beneath you so you can't sit on it and compress it. And it's tricky, but you can watch tutorials, or you can just buy one. Even REI sells them now, like A1. Like there's a underquilt you can buy. So there, you know. And then there's a YouTube guy, Shug. Shug has really good hammock videos. I haven't seen anything from him in a while. Well, I mean, I haven't looked, but his old videos are all great. And there was an experiment he did, and he's further up north. He has a lot of really cold temperatures. And he took a cheap-ish sleeping bag, and he zipped it all the way up. I can't remember. I don't think it was mummy bag, I'm not going to do show notes. I'm not going to find a link. I'll find a link at some point. He zipped it all the way up and then like sort of gently took like, you know, a wire or something and split the zipper just a little bit so he can run his hammock through it. In one zipper hole that he made and out the other one, maybe he glued the zipper so it wouldn't like unravel at any point. But basically he made like a cocoon. He made a cocoon around his hammock, you know, and he was able to, you know, on one end unzip it a little bit so he can get in and zip it back up. And the other end, you know, still had the hammock rope coming out of it to suspend it with. That looked pretty neat and, you know, fairly inexpensive. You know, you wouldn't have to use a high end, sleeping bag. You just have to find one that has the zipper arrangement right so you could, you know, zip it up and then puncture that, you know, split the zipper just a little bit at the bottom and then run it through and then run it out. So that would be an option to use. More economical, you know, for an extra thing. And he did that. I think maybe there was an underquilt still. He just sort of double layered for like a super cold, you know, negative 20 degree night. You know, so if you're going to do that, that's something you need to probably start practicing in your backyard. Research, you know, and learn your system well and what you're going to use. There's a bunch of things, and don't, it's better to try it, you know, where you have the option of aborting and being like, okay, so this system is not working. I am freezing. I'm going to go inside, or I'm going to pull out my backup and I'm going to put like, you know, my ridge rest beneath me, 'cause I know that'll work, you know. Or, another option I forgot to mention is you can put your pad, either ridge rest, you know, like closed cell foam or whatever, inside your sleeping bag with you, so that it's harder for it to slip out. Like, it can't go past your feet, and it's harder it really can't slip either way. If you roll over, like, you know, you could still touch the side with your arm and that'll get cold, but I've done that before. It gets a little, maybe having a liner inside your bag on top of that, because I feel gross when I lay on the a closed cell foam pad, like skin on skin. I don't like it. You get sort of balmy and sweaty. But anyway, I don't want to make the whole episode about hammocks, because I could. I really could. I'm just checking time. We're like 30 minutes in. Oh my God. Yeah, so let's see. Wow. God, one more thing. Wintertime hammock camping, you probably want to get a bigger tarp, bigger rain fly, as opposed to the smaller or none. You know, if I know the weather's going to be good, I'll just not wear one. You get a bigger one in the winter, and you can sort of trap some heat and radiate back at you. And they do make some, you know, and sort of deflect some of that, you know, wind from blowing on you. You know, if you can get less wind to blow beneath you, that's less of, you know, any chance of it, you know, via conduction pulling convection heat out of you. So do that. And I've seen some, and there's some mods you can do to basically put doors, you know, so basically it's almost like your hammock is inside of a tent, you know, with your fly coming down, and then like in either side sort of doors on the back. So, and that could help with some warmth. So to wrap up the shelter, you also have some of the bigger, like sort of a ATP or the big like four wall canvas tents, you know, like the old Pioneer tents and stuff. You could get both of those. They're a bit more, they're not as easy to find. You're not gonna go to your REI and find one generally. You're gonna find like a manufacturer that makes them, or, you know, a small company that makes them. And a lot of those, obviously the teepees and the other ones, they either come ready or can be easily modified to accept a tent camping stove. So they work really well for cold and extreme cold weather camping. Especially when you get like extreme cold, having that wood-burning stove in your tent makes a big difference. And, you know, it could be like life or death difference. So, you know, if you live in that, like here, there's no point in me doing that here. You know, I've lustily looked at some of those pack stoves, or even thought about building some of the DIY like paint can stoves. I would not get cold enough to even, I mean, once or twice a year maybe, but kind of a waste. Might have to take a winter camping trip to Jeff's. Close out. Oh yeah, just sort of FYI, especially in like, well, all of the tents, especially for like heat loss, closed cell foam works way better than some of the inflatable mats. So they will keep some of the heat loss from going away via conduction with the ground, but not as efficiently as closed cell foam. So just keep that in mind. Fire and heat. is the next topic. Hopefully this episode isn't boring you all to tears. Hopefully. You know, without Cocktail Mike here to make witty remarks. So yeah, fire and heat. Heat is more important. I don't, I'm looking at my show notes here, outline, and I have no idea what the first one means. Heat is more important. Sure it is. So you need to work on your wood processing system. So if you're going to be, you know, obviously even making campfires, and your bug out bag, I'm sure you do plan to make some sort of a campfire or feed your wood fire, your, you know, wood stove. Then you need to work on your system. I'm a big fan of the saw and big survival knife. That's how I do my wood processing. You know, you can saw big trees, small trees, limbs, you know, you can process it into smaller pieces, use my Buck Hoodlum to baton it with, you know, and I can get to the dry wood on the inside and just rock out. And I've never had a problem with my Buck Hoodlum. It will baton through most everything. I was a jackass one time and tried to baton through like a 4-foot piece of wood. Kind of didn't work that well. Got it stuck. Didn't damage the blade. Just came back out eventually after like tugging and stuff. So that's what I like. And I have multiple levels of the folding saw in the, you know, normally through the summertime or whatever, I'll carry just a little, you know, small folding saw and or my pocket chainsaw. I like the pocket chainsaws a lot. Much better than a lot of the folding saws, to be honest. Not the wire saw, none of that crap. I mean, a pocket chainsaw. So basically just a chainsaw blade with handles on it. Like mine are nylon handles that fit your entire hand and you do it that way. Not little wire ring things. That's crap. Don't get those. In the wintertime, the folding saw probably needs to be retired. I want a bigger saw that can process larger pieces of wood and do it faster. You know, you have a longer stroke to cut the wood on as opposed to the tiny, you know, like what, 8-inch blade at most, six to eight inch blade, you know, and it's, you get a short stroke and it just takes a lot of work, you know, especially 'cause with that short of a stroke, you're not able to like really efficiently use your body, you know, in the sawing motion. It's just like a little jerk. Yeah. So I, you know, one of those collapsible buck saws, you know, like the Saw Viver or there are a couple other ones that like take down full length bow saws. And that's definitely the way to go. You get the full draw length, you know, you can process wood much faster. And I personally like sawing over chopping. Chopping is fun, but chopping is really inefficient and time consuming, especially here in my climate. Further up north, you might want to consider moving to a camp axe, not a hatchet, but a small to medium camp axe, like the Wetterlings or the Grand Force Brooks, to do more wood processing, you know, and thicker wood and more efficiently. You know, batoning, I think it's pretty efficient, but to be honest, I would not and could not, for that matter, you know, baton logs like you would, you know, chop wood. And up north, that's definitely going to be a higher concern for you. Here, not a big deal. There, you probably want to consider going the saw route. Not the saw route, the axe route. So that's something you got to make that call on. You know, I've seen people, Nuttin' Fancy has done some really cold outings with that combo of the saw and the big survival knife, and works for him. And, you know, so whatever works for you, test it beforehand. Get the feelings for it, you know, try them both, you know, pick up an inexpensive axe, see if it's for you, see if you can make it work for you. You know, because you want your system to work, obviously. Tent stoves. We mentioned tent stoves. If you live in that colder climate, that will be your best bet. You will not regret it. If you live in a warmer area, probably not. Probably not for you. And real quick, Lee from Zulu Survival, he had mentioned that BICs are not the most reliable thing in Canada in the winter. And, you know, like I said earlier, like, you know, it's January and we're in the 60s here in the South. So I'd never even thought about it, but that butane lighters are not always the best in the extreme cold climates. You know, you keep them close to your body, you keep them warm, but there's only so much you can do. So having other methods of fire, because I'm just like, I always just carry a BIC, you know. If you are in that colder area, you probably know that, and you probably have different ways. Might want to rely more on fire seals or the sun, you know, through a Fresnel lens. If you have that, many days here in the South, even though it's not super cold, it's like every day is grayer. And it reminds me of a Lewis Black joke stand-up show from years ago where he's like, I knew the apocalypse was almost here because every day was grayer. You know, it's like, what's it going to look like today? More gray than yesterday. So, yeah. Every day is gray. Today is, it's rainy and gray. Yeah. So, it's not cold, but it's gray. Alcohol stoves, I like alcohol stoves. You know, I've showed you guys how to build them before. I've built several. I really like them. They do not work very well, even in Tennessee winters, which is ridiculous. You know, like more of like a three-season type thing, but I've had them on a chilly hike, just refused to work. There's tricks you can do to like sort of carry your alcohol, like, you know, under your shirt, touching your skin to keep it, you know, body temperature warm, but it's just sort of iffy. It doesn't work that well. Wintertime, I would rather switch to either like a hobo stove or a solo stove, you know, the little wood-burning, wood gasifier stoves, or another one of the, like a pocket rocket with the solid fuel. You might still have issues with that, because a lot of them are butane, like we said, and getting them to work kind of could be difficult. But yeah, definitely you know, like a small wood-burning stove like that. You know, I have a solo stove, and I've built many hobo stoves. They just work, and they work really well. You know, even the simplest, stupidest, like, design, it works really well. You know, and the solo stove works amazingly well. Just not in the house. I mean, I'm personal experience, I can tell you, do not try to cook with a solo stove in your house. Not the best. Not the best. But, so yeah, just real quick on wood. If, like, right now, finding ground wood here in Tennessee would be useless because all of it would be drenched to the bone. Definitely want to go look for standing dead trees and limbs to get all of your wood from. And if you do have to go to the ground, try looking for the larger chunks of wood, the thicker in diameter, and, you know, processing them down to the inside if they're not rotten, because that's where the dry wood will be. You know, the inside could be perfectly dry because it takes a while for it to soak in. Just finding the thin stuff like you would in spring or even fall definitely won't work. So yeah, inside is where it's at, and then look for standing dead, you know, because if it's not been raining for a while, and, you know, obviously if it's sitting on snow, that's probably not going to help much. But, you know, and if you're in the South with me, then you know that it's been raining off and on for weeks, and, you know, snow, and then when snow melts, because you know, we don't have snow that long. Like, it melts, and then you have a giant mud puddle everywhere. So, yeah, everything on the ground is going to be ruined. So, keep that in mind that you want to pick from – you want, it should be pretty easy to, you know, go around and look at the branches and snap one. And if it snaps with an audible snap, then bam, that's what you want. And if it goes bend, then it's green. It's keep moving. I already talked about center woods. Hot hands are cheap. Stock up on them. Hot hands and chemical hand warmers. Tip from my buddy Guy Kane from Must Hate Zombies podcast, if he's ever going to put on another episode. Anyway, yeah. So those, and then so the hot hands, and then the chemical hand warmers. They make a reusable one. I've never used it. I've kind of iffy on them. Kind of have heard different things, and the hot feet as well, which I've not used. I've used the hot hands. One time I threw like two hot hands in like my shoes because my feet were freezing cold, which I have some tips for freezing cold feet. Hold on. Yeah. So hot hands are cheap. Grab a few space blankets. So Harlan Meeks from the, and so I asked in the Survival Punks group, you know, I was like, do any of my northern brethren have any tips for a bug out bag, things you swap out in the wintertime, things you add in the wintertime? And Harlan was, he had talked about the space blankets, but not the cheap, flimsy ones, the ones that are basically a tarp. They're like usually orange on one side and reflective, you know, space blanket mylar on the other side. They're thicker. They last longer. They're warm. They're warmer than wool. And they're, I have wanted to pick one up for years, and it's weird how, like, I'll go spend $200 on a knife, and I'm like, that's $20. Like, that's a lot of money. I should probably hold off on that. So I ain't hurting pick one up. I want one. So they're even at Walmart now. The Walmart camping section has the Mylar tarp. So there's no reason not to get one. It's under $20. It's like $17, I think. Or $11. Yeah, I'm going to get one this week. I almost don't even want to state it, but just in case you have no idea about anything survival and you're like, I think I need to learn about survival, and you Google, what's a good podcast that has stuff on survival stuff, and you found this episode and you started listening to it, you should know that in the wintertime, everywhere, not just, you know, the north, but the south, because not necessarily the case in the summertime here in the south, do not have cotton. I like to have, another reason I like to have a bigger bug out bag for the winter is I like having extra clothes and warm clothes, and lots of extra socks, stuff to change into, especially if you're sweating. I want to get those clothes off and get dry clothes. You know, if I'm hiking and I'm bugging out and I still want to sleep in my socks, I want to hang out those socks to dry over the fire and put on clean, dry socks while I sleep at night. Do not want to wear cold socks. Do not want to wear anything cold and sweating longer than I have to. And you want to, like, having a nice, dry set of sleeping clothes, you know, when you're camping or bugging out. Yeah, it's definitely worth it, especially in cold climates. Yeah. So, remove all cotton, you know. And what I was saying was, you know, like the survival saying is cotton kills. Don't wear cotton because it gets wet and makes you cold. Well, there's an exception to that. Here in the South, I am a fan of using cotton in the summer because it's hot and you want to cool down. So wintertime, fall time, yeah, remove that cotton, get it out of there, except for your bandana. I'm okay with having an all-cotton bandana that is just have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things you can use with that cotton. You can make char cloth. You can, you know, you can cut it in strips, dip it in alcohol that you have for your, not for your drinking, but for your alcohol stove that you've removed out, but it's not in there anyway. And you can make lanterns and stuff out of them. So, and you cannot do that with synthetic material. Cause I've made not candles, but I've made, lanterns out of, you know, lantern, oil and empty jars, like an empty, like say an olive jar. You take a knife and you stab down into it so that when you stab into something, obviously the metal splits in and pushes downwards. So when you take a cotton cloth, like a strip of t-shirt or a shoelace, and you put it down into it, the way that the metal bends in makes it really hard to pull it back out, but easier to go in. So you can do that. It soaks into the oil, the lamp oil, and you light the end of the wick, and it makes a lantern. Kind of crude, but it works. It will not work. If you try making a wick out of, you know, a polyester shirt, it'll just melt. It will not wick the oil up to burn. So, there's no reason to have cotton with you. Cotton is out in the winter. Woolen synthetics are in. And there's a great debate on which to use. Wool retains up to 80% of its heat retention ability when wet. Synthetics can melt. You can get wool on the cheap by going to Goodwill stores and thrift stores in the spring, summer, and sometimes in the winter to have them out. They're still cheap. You can still find them. Obviously in the summertime they pull them out, but usually. So yeah, you can find them cheaper there than you can online. Wool for cheap. And you can find some of the synthetics, like the Under Armour. I have Under Armour, and all of it that I own has come from, you know, the Goodwill, for a few bucks a piece. I've looked at them at Bass Pro Shops. It's like $60 for a shirt. Get out of here. Ugh, we're almost coming up on an hour, guys. I get this episode done and put up so you can listen to it. So yeah, and you know, there's a great debate on which one to get. Stephen Harris is all synthetics. You know, there's one guy I heard a podcast from years ago that makes clothing out of closed cell foam because it's the warmest thing ever. You know, and he was training people and they were making their clothes out of the closed cell foam with some sort of fabric over the top of it. And they were sleeping outside with nothing, you know, just in their, you know, clothing they built from that. So, yeah, I don't know why it's not commercially available if it's that great. Besides, you know, not bending. You look like the little kid from A Christmas Story that can't put his arms down. But whatever, if it works, I guess. I haven't made any because that seems like a hassle. I don't know. I thought making a pair of socks out of them, you know, or like sock liners, whatever. Cold weather gloves. If you have, you know, sort of work gloves or tactical shooting gloves or whatever in your bug out bag, either add or exchange for cold weather gloves. I'm a fan of just the cheap, like, I don't know, a few bucks, $10, whatever, thin slate gloves. Here they work. And you can usually find under 20 bucks, like some waterproof-ish, you know, thin slate gloves. And I just use those for like scraping my windshield or whatever. And it works really well. If you're in a colder area, you might want to consider mittens. They're a lot warmer, you know, especially like a synthetic down mitten. They're a lot warmer. Yeah, and you lose functionality. But if you're just going to be like hiking or moving around for a while without actually having to do anything with your hands, that's an option. You know, I just always just put my hands in like a hoodie pocket. But, you know, Tennessee cold, not quite the same as Canada cold. So your mileage may vary. Wool socks. And definitely, so Lee from Zulu Survival, he's a Canadian. He was talking about sock liners. I've never used sock liners, but when I hike, sometimes I wear two socks. I wear like a wool hiking sock. And then underneath that, I wear, actually like a polyester type dress sock, and it helps prevent blisters, and it works really well because, you know, basically when you're hiking with one pair of socks, it's the friction between your foot, the sock, and the shoe inside, you know, the shoe sole, is what causes the friction to create a blister. Now, putting on a sock, you know, a sock liner, you have an extra layer, and it helps eliminate some of that friction. So it works. It works really well. And, you know, I've hiked a few times with, like, my Vibram Five Fingers with no socks, and it's like, it's usually, if it's a long hike, I'm going to get a blister. So, and getting socks, I hate, I have socks for my Five Fingers, but I kind of hate wearing them because I hate toe socks, but I like toe shoes, whatever. And I hate tofu. Hate it. Snot shit. Ugh. So, yeah. Cold weather boots, you know, and waterproof ones. That's in your area, that might be a necessity. And, you know, you might be wearing them, or definitely keep them by your bug out bag or in your bug out bag, which is why I said get a bigger bug out bag, especially for the winter, or use your Polk. I've sort of lustily looked at cold weather boots, but they would get so, they would hardly ever get used here. And I'd rather just, I don't know. I can't justify buying a pair of boots that'll get used like twice a year. So I tend to stick with more just a few layers of wool socks on the inside and maybe waterproof them with, you know, a plastic bag or something. But if you are further north than Tennessee, you know, I'm sure you have cold weather shoes and boots, and an extra pair would be prudent. Or those liners too, yeah. Oh, and I've been looking for like the ultimate coldest weather like sock, because I get cold feet a lot and I don't like it. And there's no reason to here where it's not that cold, but be damned if my feet don't get cold. So I'm trying to find a good solution to that. I have some things, and I've tried some things, but I'm really thinking closed cell foam like booties are the way to go, and I can't find them, so I'm gonna have to make them. Expect a DIY project, guys. Wool socks. I've tried a bunch of different ones, and I've not came across one that was so great it blew my mind. So, if you have some wool socks and you're like, these are the best, James, like, I've tried the Walmart brand. I've tried Kodiak. I've tried Smart Wool, thick, medium, heavy. I still get cold feet, and I can't, you know, I don't have like a recommendation. If you do, let me know. So, sort of a funny off topic. The desert boots, the Afghan desert boots, you know, for the U.S. military, they are not made for winter, not even Tennessee winter. If you have those for your bug out clothing, and you have those for winter bug out, and you're anywhere except for Afghanistan, you're wrong. They get cold and wet. They're not made for either. They're made for dry and hot. The desert. They're desert boots. So obviously, there may be some things you could do to winterize them. But this is another case where you probably just need to get winter boots. That's what you need to do. That's what you need to do, don't you know? That was my Jamaican accent. I'll look at my notes. I mentioned again the closed cell foam booty, like sort of a moccasin type thing inside the shoe. Still looking for a better option. Let me know. One thing I had a listener tell me about, or a reader, that I've tried and does work on occasion, sometimes not really when I want it to, like, I'll forget that I did it, and then I'll be inside somewhere, and then my feet will start burning. I'm like, my feet are on fire. What's going on? Oh, yeah. And that's to liberally sprinkle cayenne pepper in your shoe. And this works better, I've noticed, for me with, like, thinner socks. So if you're wearing your thin cotton socks, if you're going to go heavier than that, you might want to go two pairs of socks and sprinkle it inside of one sock and then wear a thinner sock inside of that. Or if you're fucking crazy as hell, just sprinkle it like right in the sock and you'll know. So cayenne pepper will, you know, especially if you start getting a little sweaty, will absorb through the skin. And, you know, I found, like, I was like, this didn't really make sense that this worked, but I've done it and it does work. And it does feel like your feet are kind of on fire, especially if it starts working too well. And someone was telling me that cayenne isn't actually spicy, you know, as in there are foods that are spicy, but, you know, they're spicy, they're hot, you know, but some of the peppers that work through capsaicin are not actually spicy like some other foods. Like, I guess pepper, like black pepper is spicy, is a spicy food. But cayenne is not spicy. It literally tricks your brain into thinking that it is like hot, like fire hot. And that kind of makes sense. That's kind of weird. And I didn't look into this, so maybe he's bullshitting me, but that makes sense. It makes sense that why it would trick your feet, which do not have taste buds and would not be able to taste spice, into thinking that it's hot. Because capsaicin isn't spicy. It literally does trick, I guess, the brain into thinking it's hot. Interesting semantics, but it works. And it does work. So yeah. And the thinner the sock, it takes a while to kick in, especially like if you build up a little, you know, sweat, you get a little hot, and then that helps transpire it in there. Is it aloe? Maybe mixing it with, oh God, this could be a bad experiment. Maybe if you mix aloe vera gel with cayenne pepper and like lotioned your feet and then put them into your sock, that would work, because aloe vera gel has a weird property of just bypassing like the skin blood barrier and getting straight into your body, which is really kind of like, it's a little sketchy with things that have aloe vera gel and like chemicals. Maybe I'm going to try that, and maybe it'll be a terrible idea. I'm like, I've cured my cold feet with cayenne gel pepper lotion. Crazy James's cayenne pepper gel. Tired of your cold feet? Put this on there and have them burst in the flames. Yeah, I'm getting tired, so sorry, I'm going to wrap this up. Sock liners, glove liners. Lee mentioned that to me, and probably something you need to look into. I need to look into. I'm definitely going to check out sock liners to keep my feet a bit warmer. Something we do here in the South, kind of ghetto and fun. We take the plastic bags you get when you go shopping. I call them Kroger sacks. Up north, like, what is it? Chicago, everything's a Jewel Osco, whatever. You know, basically a Walmart sack, a plastic sack when you go shopping. And then you could put them over your shoe or over your sock in your shoe, and it's a poor man's waterproofing there. Keep the water from getting to your feet. Helps a little bit with the warmth, a little bit, not a lot, but it helps. You know, and if you don't have summertime sunglasses in your bug out bag, you might want to consider wintertime sunglasses, or just put sunglasses in there year round, because snow reflects a lot of light and you can get snow blindness. The other day, the day where we actually had a lot of snow, it had lit up my house so bright, it was even harder to go to sleep because I work nights, I sleep during the daytime. You know, my house was lit up like there's a UFO outside trying to shine in here. So, yeah, I mean, I wear an eye mask, but still, definitely something to consider. If you're going to be out there walking all day in snow, bright lights, if you're not, you know, gray, because we're gray here, but if you're not gray, it could blind you. It could, like, cause a lot of eye stress. And so just get some sunglasses. There's no point in building one of those silly, like, you know, snow blind mask things with, like, trees or whatever. I think we're going to have to call it here. We're at an hour. Ugh. So, food and water. Real quick. plastic Nalgene. You might want to swap out your metal Nalgene cup in the wintertime for a plastic Nalgene cup, because if you've ever noticed, like, cold, like, metal keeps things colder. Well, it does. So if you use plastic, it will slow down, like, the amount that you freeze the water, and, you know, get a metal nesting cup or something to boil with. You know, I use, like, my Solo pot, but use that. Wintertime, you're going to burn more calories, so you might want to, not might, you're going to need more calories. And I like hot foods. Also, you can get things. The wintertime gives you a bit more freedom in some ways and less freedom in other ways. So, you know, obviously, things that freeze are going to freeze and, you know, they're going to rupture and break. Not a good thing. But a lot of things will stay cool. You know, like I have some, like, paleo ration bars I invented, and one of the main ingredients is coconut oil. So in the wintertime, they'll stay solid, as will all coconut oil. You know, and in the summertime, especially here in the South, it just becomes a goopy mess. It's just disgusting because coconut oil turns at 75, it's a solid, 76, it's a liquid. So, you know, it's all summer long. It would be, you know, hell, half of our winter here, it would be a liquid. So, yeah. Bouillon cubes are a great thing to add. I mean, basically for a quick pick-me-up, just have bouillon cubes, like a quick soup. Lots of soups you can make with that. And you carry dehydrated veggies and stuff to make a more paleo-friendly meals. Have, you know, like stews, you know, like you can get stuff like Mountain House or Paleo Meals to Go, dehydrated soups and stews, whatever. Good stuff. That's it. Real quick for the medical stuff, if you should have a first aid kit in your bug out bag, you definitely should. Some of those things like Neosporin may get a bit freezy. So, I always like to individually bag a lot of my medical supplies anyway, and a lot of my survival gear. Definitely want to make sure that everything is bagged up. You don't want, tincture of iodine spilling on everything or freezing. Like everything, though. And I carry water in my bottles, in my bug out bag, usually, you know, three seasons. Wintertime, I take that out because I don't want to carry in water to be frozen and crack my container. So that's another thing I do. And shovel. I forgot shovel. You may or may not carry a shovel seasonally, but in the wintertime, you get even more use out of it. So having a folding shovel, just definitely have one. I like having one year round anyway, but in wintertime, even more. And with that, one more thing, and then we wrap up because I really, 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 really do have to go, you guys. You might want to consider that your bug out, like, knife or knives for winter use when there could be more rain or snow are definitely more rust proof. You know, so there are different metals, and some of them are more rust resistant than others, you know. Some of them you have to sort of baby and, you know, oil and whatnot. You know, like a Mora knife is going to rust if you look at it wrong, you know. And then you have some, like, better, you know, you have some, like, different Serawa knives that are really, really rust proof, you know. Overall, you know, sometimes the edges can get rusty if you don't, you know, take care of them, keep them oiled. WD-40, or, you know, I usually try to use, like, cheap olive oil. That way it's food safe, but keep them oiled and keep them dry. Don't let them sit in wet sheaths and rust and fall apart. But yeah, wintertime, you want to probably, if you can, use a more rust-proof knife than not. And with that, this has been James from the Survival Punk Podcast. DIY to stay warm, guys.